minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to Morning Magazine for Friday, January 28th of 2022. I'm your host, Rosanna Longobetter, in for Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up after headlines, we talk about what the Marshall Fire has done to real estate prices in Boulder County. And even after Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser has warned service providers against increasing prices in the wake of the Marshall Fire, a displaced renter from Louisville shares his struggles after he lost most of his belongings. And then our regular Friday feature, .org. Today, we hear about a Denver nonprofit helping feed hungry kids. BBC update at 8:30, and then connections will come your way. As always, the phone lines will be open and your calls welcome. Your host this morning is Joel Edelstein. Then at 9:30, the Morning of Sound Alternative brings you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. All still ahead, all made possible by listener members of KGNU. We begin with local news headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
The state's health department and the Colorado School of Public Health released an updated COVID-19 modeling report earlier this week. The report estimates 80% of the state's population will be immune to Omicron by mid-February. The report states immunity to the variant is high and rising. The report suggests infections and hospitalizations have peaked statewide and will continue to decline, although there is uncertainty in the rate of COVID-19 hospitalizations. Some locations worldwide are reporting a slower decline in hospitalizations for uncertain reasons. Absent another highly transmissible variant not covered by the current level of immunity, the report also says the pandemic lull could reach into the summer. The state epidemiologist, Dr. Rachel Hurley, said in a news briefing yesterday the BA2 variant, a descendant of the Omicron variant, has not been detected in wastewater testing, and officials do not believe it is widely circulating in Colorado. The state health department has only confirmed one case of the BA2, and that was in late December. Experts warn, although the current Omicron curve has begun a decline, the state is experiencing high levels of COVID-19 disease transmission. Officials are urging the continued use of high-quality masks, getting vaccinated along with boosters, and avoiding large indoor gatherings. Boulder County crews will begin the curbside collection of smoke and wind-damaged items from properties that were impacted by the Marshall Fire starting this Sunday, January 30th. Residents can still sign up for this collection by filling out an online form at www.boco.org/Marshall Fire Self-Report. For properties that were burned and destroyed by the Marshall Fire, Boulder County has extended the deadline to February 8th for residents to submit a right of entry form that will allow the county to remove imminent hazards and to perform soil stabilization work. Property owners can find an online and printed version of the right of entry form on the county's website. County officials are encouraging those property owners choosing not to take part in the program to still fill out the form by designating an opt-out. The opt-out designation will assist officials in accurately tracking all properties and to ensure efficient remediation efforts. Residents can get more information on county debris removal by calling the hotline at 303-214-3203. A bipartisan pair of lawmakers from Colorado introduced legislation to assess the largest black homestead settlement in Colorado. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
U.S. Representatives Ken Buck, Republican from Colorado's 4th Congressional District, and Joe Nagus, Democrat from the 2nd District, has introduced the Deerfield Study Act to direct the Department of Interior to do a special resource study on the Deerfield homestead. The resource study would determine the Deerfield homestead's historical significance and viability of the land becoming part of the U.S. National Park System. The Colorado Newsline reports that the Deerfield homestead, which is located about 70 miles northeast of Denver, was founded by Oliver Toussaint Jackson in 1910. Jackson was motivated by Booker T. Washington to establish the colony. Washington felt that land ownership was the best path to prosperity for African Americans. Washington, the black activist and author, had helped found what is now known as Tuskegee University, the historically black university in Alabama. The Deerfield Homestead was a thriving agricultural community and was home to multiple churches, businesses, and restaurants, reaching its peak in the late 1910s through the 1920s. It was home to 700 residents from 35 states until the Dust Bowl, which started in 1930, caused the collapse of crop prices, forcing many residents to return to the Denver area. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Longmont City Council approved additional funding earlier this week to support the city's development and incentives towards a Costco retail store that is projected to open in 2023. The project also includes development of affordable housing at an adjacent 9-acre property. The additional funding passed by a unanimous vote with a brief amount of discussion by council members. The Daily Camera reports there was no public comment on the project during the city council meeting. Rising construction and development costs prompted the city to allocate roughly $3.6 million from three separate city funds to offset recent bids that went over development estimates that were originally projected in November 2020. The allocation includes funding from the American Rescue Plan Act and the city's Affordable Housing Fund. The site of the development is located east of Harvest Junction South near the intersection of Ken Pratt Boulevard and South Martin Street. The Daily Camera reports a group of Longmont residents, represented by an attorney, are opposing the project. The group has no current litigation against the city, but has expressed the city should stop facilitating the construction of another big box store that is redundant to other stores in the area. A city report estimates sales taxes generated by the store will recoup Longmont's $12.8 million expenditure towards the Costco project and the nearby affordable housing project in less than 4 years. Construction on the project will begin in April. Workers at a Starbucks on East Colfax Avenue in Denver submitted a petition yesterday to the National Labor Relations Board for an election towards union representation. According to an affiliate with Service Employees United International Union, a majority of the workers at the Denver store signed union authorization cards. Union efforts are increasing against the coffee giant as the petition follows recent NLRB filings by Starbucks workers in Superior and at other stores nationwide. Starbucks employees at a Buffalo area store successfully formed a union in early December. Today's weather along the upper metro front range includes sunny skies with highs in the 40s. Tonight will be mostly clear with lows in the teens for Fort Collins and in the 20s for Denver and Boulder. Sunny skies will continue into the weekend with highs in the 50s for Denver and Boulder and in the 40s for Fort Collins. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 18 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
The already high real estate prices in Boulder County are skyrocketing since the Marshall Fire. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Amanda DeVito Parle and Shannon Shilait, both second-generation realtors who co-founded a Facebook group to help connect victims of the Marshall Fire with housing.
Amanda, Shannon, thank you both for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
So to start off, tell me about what's happening to the real estate market in Boulder County in the last few weeks, since thousands of people have lost their homes to the Marshall Fire.
Well, I can tell you, sort of leading up to Marshall Fire or leading up to where we're at now, this and sort of this perfect storm. And, if I could step back before I go forward, this will help give you some perspective. But in 2006 and 2007, the summer of those two summers, we had somewhere around 30,000 houses for sale, 7,700 condos for sale. Today, we have 1,500 houses for sale, and we have 530 condos for sale.
Wow. So just to repeat those numbers, in Boulder County, we had 30,000 houses for sale in 2007. And today there are, is it fewer than 2,000 total?
Right, that's residential for sale signs in front yards, 30,000 houses in 2007. And now it's more like 2,000 houses.
Wow. That's not a lot.
Right. So the market is remarkably, remarkably tight. And so the only way one can really understand the shortage of inventory is to understand those availability numbers. So we go into the Great Recession. And I always say the builders kind of got left holding the bag. They had a lot of land plays. They had a lot of undeveloped lots. They didn't have as many buyers as they had houses. So when the market tanked and the builders got left holding the bag, they really came out of the recession scared. So from 2012 to today, Tim's been underbuilding. We knew coming out of the Great Recession that we were going to have an undersupply of houses. And we have more millennials than we had boomers. So we have this national housing shortage. And so you couple that with a whole bunch of other economic or local factors in Denver. Things like, you know, West sold their water 100 years ago. So we don't have a ton of water. We have natural gas moratoriums. We have really expensive building permits at the municipality. So you've got, you know, water and sewer tap fees in the city of Broomfield, something like $68,000 or something to get a water and sewer tap fee. Then you take a really tight builder market with a really tight municipal overlay, with really tight natural resources. And COVID caused this mass exodus on urban America. Then you had the feds drop rates because they were trying to stimulate the market and keep people eagerly buying. And all of a sudden, you have this fire. So you had all of these scenarios that were lining up to make for really remarkably tight real estate conditions. And then you put all of the marbles on the scale at one time when 1,000 houses burnt to the ground. So there wasn't 1,000 places for 1,000 families to go to begin with, let alone all at the same time. And so ultimately, to come around bend on that is going to be like nothing anybody in this market has ever experienced.
So where are we at? What are you guys seeing in terms of housing prices? Shannon, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, you know, for properties for sale, this past weekend, we were seeing almost everything going 15 to 20% over the list price with multiple offers, waiving inspection requests, waiving appraisals, free 60-day rent backs. It's just, it's really... really hitting our market.
Shannon and I sort of jokingly say our crystal balls are broken, but I anticipate that real estate prices are going to even go up 20% in the first 6 months of this year is my prediction. And I think you're going to continue to see rents go up. We're expecting increases for mortgage interest rates in the next 2 or 3 quarters. And I think that will help combat inflation a little bit. But some of what you're seeing is market appreciation, and some of what you're seeing is market inflation. And so those two factors together are going to make everything look really expensive. And everything is actually going to be really expensive in the next 6 months or a year. So I think that those people who want to own something should get busy and buy something if they can. And I think buying is going to be a real challenge in the next 6 months for buyers. And then if there's a contingent of people who want to sell their houses up for sale and maybe move out of state or move to, you know, a different area of the country, they're going to get top dollar for their houses right now.
Shannon Schlate and Amanda DeVito-Parle are both second-generation RE/MAX Alliance realtors. They created a Facebook group that is now up to almost 4,000 members to help victims of the Marshall Fire find housing. Amanda, Shannon, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having us.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
In Colorado, charging excessive prices for certain essential goods or services during a disaster period is prohibited by law. The state attorney general made clear that such actions are considered deceptive trade practices under the Colorado Consumer Protective Act. The law states that the disaster period will last for 180 days from the date of the event. Keith Ursek, a professional contractor and now a displaced renter, shares his frustrating experiences with some entities who are either not aware of or insensitive to the struggles people are facing after the devastating Marshall Fire.
Everything in the neighborhood was incinerated. So it was very, very hard to see. A lot of times you think of a house fire and you think, well, somebody's going to fight the fire and maybe the stuff, because we have plastic tubs in the basement. And it was probably just on that thought, too, where, okay, if there's water pouring down on the house because somebody's fighting the fire, things in the basement will be probably flooded or soaking wet or something like that. But since nobody actually fought this fire at my house or any of the other ones around it, there was absolutely nothing left. Everything incinerated. The safe, everything in the safe, every single thing that I've ever touched in the last 58 years disappeared. We rented that house for 18 years. Our kids grew up there. Our entire life was that house. And we rented one before it, which was only, I don't know, a quarter mile away. So we've been in the Louisville area since we've moved here. We were looking for a house. We just, along the way, I have my own business, and we kind of put money back into the business. We put money into our kids to make sure they were fine, and we're never actually able to come up with enough down and at the right time and have enough to actually get a house. So we were actively looking for a house, but lately things, the last year and a half, 2 years, have just been crazy in the housing market. Everything doubled in price. So that made it even harder for us to actually find a place.
Have you been able to access federal support to get a more permanent rental home or a home until you are back on your feet?
No. We went to FEMA, and they said go to, since I have a small business, I went to SBA. We filed something on the home side. We filed something on the business side. Both of those got denied because, being self-employed, they said I didn't have the ability to pay it back. So our credit is outstanding. Our life has changed a lot in the last 5 years, and we've really been able to put some money away, do some things and stuff like that. And that's why we decided, you know, we need to buy a house, because we were paying, at the end, we were paying $3,200 a month to rent that house and not getting anything out of it. So
this is going to take a while until you get the money that you are supposed to get, until they figure it out.
Yes. Being a renter and having a renter's policy with State Farm. We had a renter's insurance. But when you get that, originally, you probably don't have as much in the beginning. And then as you grow and you get more stuff and everything like that, you never actually look back, or the State Farm doesn't say, you know what, we should look at your policy and maybe you should cover more. Because now, I mean, I have my business tools in the garage and plus everything in the house. I mean, it was all ours. It was not like a furnished house when we moved in or any of that stuff. It was all ours in there. And after 18 years and being a contractor like I am, I remodeled the place and took care of it and did stuff like it was my own house, just because that's how I treat things. So I went back, and after the fire, being renters, and State Farm told me, like, my maximum was going to be like $20,000 to cover what's in the house and the garage, which doesn't even come close to where I'm at.
Keith, you are sharing with us a really hard situation. Recently, Phil Weiser sent a communication requesting the landlords not to raise the prices for rentals and to be considered to also watch over for those that want to take advantage of this situation, this hard situation for people.
And I'm not sure how it actually works out, but, you know, I have a feeling that also if you did own a home and your policy was written to where it would cover rental in case of an emergency or, you know, you had to get out of the house or something like that, that maybe people are thinking, well, we can raise it because the insurance company is paying for it anyway, not actually the people who are living there.
Are you having to continue paying the rent in that home that you live for 18 years?
No. And I was actually on a month-to-month lease. There was no lease for a year, any of that stuff. It was a month-to-month. We could have just said, okay, we're out of here. So, I mean, we didn't say it, but the fire did.
Keith, you really sound like you are well-versed and understand, but still, it sounds like it's not an easy situation. It's not easy to apply for the supports that you need.
There's got to be some way where the government could somehow help people qualify and get a home instead of everybody having to rent. Actually, I talk to people in my neighborhood, and even though there's no house on the property or anything, they're still having to pay HOA fees, which seems kind of ridiculous, since what's your homeowners association doing with that money if there's no houses there? So it just seems like somebody's not following the paperwork. It's just being generated by somebody who's not understanding what everybody has gone through and where they're at.
Elaborate a little more about this paperwork. So you're saying that people are requesting the support. People that are getting these papers are not understanding what the real situation is.
Yeah, exactly. How could you possibly ask somebody who lost their home, have no place to live, and then tell them they have to pay a homeowners association fee every month still? There are some houses, like not everyone in our neighborhood burned down. Everything to the west of us did, and four houses to the east did. But the people that are still there, and they're kind of telling them, well, we can't make them pay more for their homeowners' fees to make up for the fees where the houses burned down. And it just sounds crazy that somebody would even be suggesting that would do it. I mean, people don't understand, like, you know, our Xfinity, I called right away, our internet, and I said, hey, this is what happened, and we don't need internet anymore because there's actually no house and no anything. And then I get a text message, like, I did this like 2 weeks ago, and I got a text message this week that said, I need to return my equipment or I'm going to be charged. Now, that's somebody who has no idea. There is no equipment. There is nothing left. It all melted. It all disappeared. But I got a text message from somebody that, you know, from Xfinity saying, return your equipment or you're going to be charged for it. So, I don't know, just crazy things like that that nobody is looking at it and understanding. I mean, we're going to go forward. That's the kind of people we are. We're not sitting in bed every day saying, I can't get out of bed. I can't function. We are still going forward. I'm still working, and we're going to make money and get a house and continue on.
That's for sure. You're going to be blessed with a lot of abundance. I have been speaking with Keith Ercik, a displaced renter, about the struggles he's facing due to the devastating fire.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz with KGNU.org, and I'm here with Bob Bell from Food for Thought. Bob, you want to tell us a little bit about your organization and what you guys do?
You bet. Thank you, Chris. And Food for Thought Denver is a local nonprofit that was formed to bridge the hunger gap for elementary age students in Denver and surrounding areas now. Kids that exist in Title I school environments and don't have a sustainable way to eat over the weekend. So hot lunch on Friday being the last thing they're consistent with, coming back to school on Monday, having not really had a good place to eat. A special ed teacher who described that exact problem to me in a neighborhood school that was literally blocks from my office and blocks from where I grew up. And, you know, it's one of those things, Chris, when you hear something like that, you're rather compelled to do something or you're not going to sleep well. So we just banded together and tried to figure out how to feed those 300 kids. That was 2012 on St. Patrick's Day when the first session went down, and we haven't missed a Friday now since 2012. And thanks to the generous Denver community, we are now in 72 different schools across the city. The only expense we have, we're committed to having no overhead, and we have none other than the food that we purchase. So we don't have any employees, trucks, buildings. We work outdoors under a bridge. The only expense we have is what we purchase in the way of food from the Food Bank of the Rockies. So that's our partner in this endeavor, and we're begging for your help. You know, obviously I'm begging for $5 because that's my job, but mainly we need you come down and just see it. We gather every Friday morning to pack the food. We'll have you back to work that same day. The food goes home that day. Everything relative to signing up and or donating is on our website, food.denver.org. And if there's any schools that are interested in the program, my phone number is right there on that website, and we'll come running. That registration link is on that foodforthoughtdenver.org website. It'll show you what's available in all times and locations. We can just use the bodies to be truthful. You know, with everything that's going on in the environment right now, there's a lot of people unable to come down and attend. So our website is foodforthoughtdenver.org.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dotorg.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I have been your host, Rosanna Longobetter. Special thanks to Stacy Johnson, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon for their contributions for today's program, and to Sam Fuqua for operating the board and providing editorial support during this week. Stay tuned for Connections just after this news update from the BBC.